I'm Reggie.
Are you?
No.
Oh.
I'm Brian.
And this is R&B Talks.
Still R&B Talks.
And guess what we have today?
We have a guest.
Dude.
Sweet.
Hopefully this all works and we don't say, oh, it didn't work and we have to redo it.
Actually, I
hate to have to re-record all this.
Oh, look at it. Look.
Look. Look. Look. It's a guest.
It's Indiana Jim, yo.
Indiana Jim.
I don't have one of those spiffy cut and pasted together audio.
You should. At least clips. Put a whip crack in there.
Oh, yeah. There's another. Yeah.
What's that?
Another voice. It must be
the voice Roberto. Of the producer.
Roberto. What? We have a full crew today.
We have a producer.
Like, we have a producer.
Yeah.
Roberto.
Producing this.
He's producing.
Producing.
Producing the things.
That's right.
Yeah. Robbie is the grandmaster of all things audio, so we're glad to have him here.
If it's good, I touched it. If it's bad, it was Reggie.
And there was the useful thing for me to say.
He ain't lying.
So, Jim?
Yes?
How are you?
I'm pretty good.
This is my first day meeting Jim.
Yeah. Lucky you.
I know. It's an honor and a privilege.
Yeah, it is.
A gentleman and a scholar.
Oh, wait. For me, of course. Yeah.
So, how you feeling, Reg?
You know, I'm better today, man.
Good.
It's good. It's a journey.
You look good. You look good.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't been good.
I went and got a haircut today before I came up here.
Bro, you just...
Found out my bald spot's showing a little more. Reggie, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but when it starts kind of just... creeping off.
I don't
head.
Know if Reggie had a bald spot. He got super receding. Like yeah, Reggie. It was Reggie was like super receding.
There it is. There's the
truth. It just receded all the way. Huh?
His part was right here.
I had a high forehead anyway, and it just started going. You know, and it's like, you know, it's getting pretty far back there. I should probably just let that go.
Robbie, what was your excuse?
Stopped having dreams.
Oh, I had a bald spot, definitely. And it got super thin. So it started looking like I was either going to have to comb over or shave it, so...
I'm with the shave.
I will gladly donate some of this mutton of hair that's on my head. It's miserable.
I would take it. I don't want a Trump cut.
You know, mutton is meat from a lamb.
Yeah.
So I don't know what...
That's the only thought that could come to my brain. I can tell this is going to be a long episode. It is.
Okay, look.
It's going to be a long episode.
So welcome back, Jim. We are tickled pink having you back here, buddy.
I'm certainly excited that you're here.
I'm glad you're actually here this time.
I am, yes.
And you're not out busting your face.
Fortunately, last time I was getting my face rebuilt and had to go through a little bit of the business.
Okay, so I'm going to probably stray severely off of our planned outline because I'm actually with it today. So
sweet.
I want to dig into a little bit of this because I listened to your top 100 podcast episode.
Oh, yeah.
And I think this is completely and totally relevant for what we are doing today. So, and also too, this referencing to like you referenced the
now that would be Indiana Jim on YouTube. Please go
indeed,
there.
Indeed.
This is what he's talking about.
I don't produce that one.
Your other episode where you were talking about the article written about the Search for Gollum movie.
Hunt for Gollum movie, right?
Yep. So I looked at both of these articles after you said something and was listening to what you said. And I'm just going to say, I think you're just hitting on something that the lack of expert, like I would say competence even in journalism in general today. We were talking New York Times here. And it was a stupid article. It's just stupid. Like it exactly what you said, where
right.
It seems like the author was just had no historical or really had done really minimal research into the podcast scenario in any way. So,
oh yeah, the time. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you want to, I just think it's helpful because it illustrates not only that the lack of true journalism we really see nowadays in publications like the New York Times, but also in the podcast space in general, how that's not really, I guess it's not really seen correctly a lot of times.
Well, this was foretold to us by the prophets who said that as soon as mainstream media got their hooks into podcasting, the world would forget that it was a cottage industry to begin with. And, you know, you can thank NPR for a lot of that. But, you know, it's anything that's new, that is nascent, has the small individual communities that don't know each other exist until something that's mainstream decides to harness that and it becomes part of the public knowledge and then go, oh, look, there's this new thing called a podcast that in, you know, 2010, when we've been at it for 4 years or even longer for a lot of people. And so what you have is this, the people that are in the mainstream that just discovered podcasts later on that were not early adopters, they weren't there at the beginning. So they don't know what was there and they don't know what the history of that was. And we've gotten to the point now where we don't really keep history anymore. And everything's, if it's not current, it's not worth talking about. And so you might, the further we get away from, you know, the founding or the Wild West or any of these historical periods throughout our history, American history, is like we start losing that valuing any historical perspective whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, especially, so, I mean, I would not consider podcasting to be like an old thing. Like it's
20 years old.
But only 20. I mean, comparatively to a lot of other you know, things, I mean, relatively, it's a new thing. It's a new entertainment avenue that we've had, and it's only that's recent.
Yeah.
And I think it's a monumental shift between other things because it breaks off from radio to radio talk shows to now have an independent release, just like you said,
well, pod. And people don't even know what the word podcast came from. Like, where did that, how was that even invented? Like, they don't know that number one, they might think iPod, okay, but they don't think of it as a takeoff of the word broadcast. And so it's like, oh, today on the pod, it's like, no, that's not what this is. You know, it literally references the iPod, but it literally stands for portable on demand and cast. You cast it out to somebody's device. Like that's how it came about. That's why they called it. That's why they used the word cast. So,
but
that you go on YouTube and find a video and they call it a podcast and it has nothing to do with the original term.
The reason why I guess we're especially talking about this is because the actual list they put together was pretty stupid. I mean, again, I'll use the word stupid.
I mean, I don't know. You know,
some of it was fine.
A lot of those I don't listen to. And obviously, they're all professionally produced by somebody like a Robbie. You know, but these are typically large media companies that have professional staff who get paid to do this. Sorry, Robbie. I don't know if you paid him. You would have been paid in food, but you weren't here.
He pays me in brisket.
Yeah. You know, who are professionals at what they do. And so all the hosts have to do is just prepare their notes and come in and somebody else sets up the microphone. Somebody else, you know, like you guys were fiddling with the tech over there and they just come in and talk. They don't have to post it. They don't have to do the metadata. They don't have to do anything on the back end. And it might as well just be another TV talk show. It might as well just be another radio show that some professionals have produced.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it was. But
they're all competently produced. The entertainment value or informational value of the content may be up for grabs. But my only contention was, if you're going to have the 100 best of all time, you better include something that goes back to the of all time in this thing we call podcast.
I think that speaks to our current way of thinking, though, right? Like you said.
Well, yeah, like LeBron's the greatest basketball player of all time. Well, you're not going back. And I talked about that. Well, you're not going back and looking at it.
Like you look at, I mean, if you're weeding through the podcast world, right, and you're trying to find something of weight, 10 years ago, that was a lot easier to find podcasts that had content and weight. But now, because we are in this self-serving kind of time frame where we don't want to be right, we want to feel good. Mm-hmm. You've got all these just garbage, like feel-good podcasts that, you know, people – the worst thing that anybody can do at this point is go, Brian, you should listen to this podcast. I'm not going to.
Well, you even pointed out, Jim, like the one girl who – you played the clip of like so they did the podcast for the money.
Right. I looked at it as a way to make some more money.
Yeah. Which is completely not really what podcasting was brought about to do.
Right. And again, shows, radio shows and TV shows were made to sell advertising. You know, soap operas existed because they were trying to sell soap, right? Like, that's a normal feature of our media entertainment, except for maybe a movie that's not really trying to sell a product, but it's just trying to tell you a story. Now, you have product placement and such, but they're not designed to sell commercials, right? All this other stuff's designed to keep you watching so you'll watch the commercials.
Yeah.
Not so you'll watch the story. And so there's some of that, but it's like it was one person's opinion. Like, if you get a broad panel of people that have been listening to podcasts for a long time, you're going to find some different answers and some different reasons. And I just think in her case, it's what's popular in her head, you know, and what she's heard about. And she was only capable of having her perspective, not anyone else.
Well, I've been disappointed in the Times for a long time. I know,
so this is Time Magazine.
Time Magazine.
Yeah, but same thing.
Yeah. Well, sorry. Yeah, Time Magazine. Let me say this again. Time Magazine used to be a publication where I did actually read it.
Yeah.
You know, at one time. But we're talking 20 years ago, probably, when podcasting was coming out, is when I was reading Time Magazine because it had actual well-written things in it. But anymore, the things like Time Magazine and all these other, it just like your critique of like the hunt for Gollum was like this whole headline about it being, you know, the them now being villains.
Gandalf and Aragorn were going to be villains then in the story.
It actually says in the, like you point, it was
technically they're not actually villains, right?
Yeah, I mean you
have the headline to sell the story, and it doesn't quite match.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Article. I mean, it kind of goes along with the sensationalism.
It's classic clickbait.
Yeah, yeah. But
and the other thing about the podcast list is, like, I pointed this out. When we started in 2004, there were 300 and something podcasts. And now there's over 400,000 active podcasts. So it's hard enough for one person to pick out of 100, let alone 400,000, you know.
Yeah, it's a set. I mean, we're saturated. I mean, we're here not doing it for, we're not doing it for money. We're not monetized or anything we're just doing it because we like to share our opinions in some other space than some comment war BS, right? And that's really what we're doing. We come on here just to do this so we can say our opinions and put it in public in a format that somebody may be able to understand it better than just going and putting a comment on social media in a faceless post.
Right.
Makes no sense. So that's what we're here. But we're also it's also something me and Brian enjoy quite a bit.
Yes, we do.
So Brian, I know you missed the first episode where, you know, obviously you were getting beat in the head by a steering wheel. I'll just open it up to you. What might you want to ask, oh mighty Indiana GM over there?
Oh boy.
You know, I'm going to ask you a question that my oldest son wanted me to ask
you. Oh boy.
You are a Star Wars expert.
Well,
I have watched enough of the episodes of your podcast to know that you have quite a bit of knowledge.
Okay, that's fair to say.
And my sons are early in their spiritual walk.
Oh.
And my oldest asked me a question, and I would love to ask you this question. And that's, what do you feel, if any, are the parallels of the force versus the morally centered force versus the morally centered world we live in now? Is there a between the religious and the, you know, I know if you look at, and I've kind of read a little bit, if you look at, there's a moral center for the Jedi, right? There's a need to do good. There's a need to, you know, live a noble life.
Mm-hmm.
And my son is just now starting to discover his walk of faith. And he just asked me, he goes, do you think that there are any parallels? And I was like, you know what? That'd be a great question for Indiana Jim. Sorry, I'm going to say his name a few more times so more people subscribe to his podcast.
Well, it's this concept of myth, and that's a kind of the word myth is a misnomer. it's commonly thought of as false.
Yeah.
Fake, not real. And what myth is, as a friend of mine said, it's the It's the furniture arranging apparatus that we use to put things in their context of experience in the world. And so when you say like Christian mythology, you're talking about the stories that explain how the world came to be, our place in it, whether you assume it's true or factual versus, you know, made up or whatever. So when you think of mythology, often you think of Greek mythology and their pantheon of gods and whatnot. So when George Lucas was in film school and he was conceptualizing a lot of these things, he came across Joseph Campbell's Hero with a Thousand Faces. And so he knew, he recognized that if I'm going to make this story work, and he was interested in anthropology and how people, you know, how stories and legends came into existence and sort of had all this percolating in his head. And he said, I need to find a way to synthesize kind of this overall myth that we have as humans. So what Campbell did was kind of distill all these world religions and major myths into kind of a cohesive whole, and that's how he came up with the hero's journey. It's like these factors are all interrelated between all of these belief systems. Not all of them happen in the same order. Some have more things going on in them, but you can look at the hero's journey and kind of see a rough arc of the stories of Moses and Jesus and, you know, what a name a biblical hero, and you can see the hero's journey pattern kind of at work. But the thing that we believe as Christians is there is one true myth. There is one true corpus of stories that explains who we are, where we came from, and why we exist. So there are definitely elements within Star Wars that reflect the Christian faith. A lot of that we get from Yoda's conversation with Luke on Dagobah, right? That the dark side is quicker, easier, more seductive. Mm-hmm. That you will know what to do when you are calm and at peace. And that refers back maybe to the still small voice of the spirit that we have that guides us. So there are plenty of elements of it. Now, as far as with God, he gave us in word form how we're to live our lives, right? Because he knows we're not going to be able to figure it out just on our own. So a lot of what the Jedi do, they've figured out over time, but the Force is literally, and this is where we might get into midichlorians, and I know people hate the idea of midichlorians, but what Obi-Wan tells Luke in Star Wars is, it's an energy field created by all living things and binds the galaxy together, right? So an energy field is not mystical. It's a thing. It's a substantive thing. And what creates it? Life does. And even on Dagobah, Yoda says, life creates it, makes it grow. So it's this idea that we're all connected in this life force that binds the Earth and the galaxy together. And Qui-Gon even talks about the living force. So it's kind of the morality of the Jedi isn't written down anywhere. It's been collected over time, but what it essentially is the wills, which are these microscopic beings, and the midichlorians are interrelated with them. And we see in Clone Wars, like the Lost, like season 7 that they came out with, Yoda sort of talks to the wills, and this was George's kind of big thing, that even from his earliest inception, it's like, this is a story that was related to someone else. And R2-D2 was like the witness of all of these things. And so he's the one kind of telling the story. That's why it's from the perspective of the droids. They kind of get out of that. But the point is that there are these beings that are in the Force that are whispering to the Jedi. Qui-Gon says to Anakin, when you're still and you're quiet, you will hear them speaking to you. So it's this idea that we have a God who speaks to us, both through words and through the Spirit prompting us, telling us what to do or what not to do. And so the Jedi have discovered that it's about whatever supports life, whatever supports peace. These things are the things that let the Force flow freely. And only when you become selfish, when you become obsessive, when you become controlling, that's when life breaks down. That's when society breaks down. And only pain and suffering can come out of that. So it's almost kind of a Buddhist idea too, because there's a lot of that in there of finding peace over suffering. Where in the Christian life, it's like, take up your cross, you're going to suffer, but you find peace in the midst of that. So it gets convoluted a little morally, but there are certainly elements that we can point to and say that's just like how it is being a Christian.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good answer. Very good answer.
Might be longer than what you wanted, but.
No, actually, perfect. Perfect.
Sure.
Yeah. Robbie?
Were you sleeping?
What?
Was that perfect?
I think it was perfect. I was entranced. I was just sitting here going, wow, he knows a lot.
I was like,
even I was sitting here going, wow, this is a lot.
I was like,
I like it though. Like,
this is the perfect guy to ask this question to.
Yeah.
So
it's really interesting.
No. So,
okay. One of the things that Jim, you keyed up on though, particularly that you said you had input, but you didn't want to put it in a comment.
Oh yeah.
Was concerning like how Christian men are disengaging from the church.
Yes.
Mm.
So now that you have a little more space, would you like to enlighten us with what you?
Well, it really spoke to what I've been going through the last forever that I can remember. And I'm trying to remember when it started. I think it was after my experience we went to Georgetown. I was at Georgetown Baptist Church as the worship leader for 2 years. And not all of it was bad. Most of it was really actually quite good. They had a house on the property that they were trying to figure out what to do with. And they're like, well, we were having trouble with our house where we lived at the time. And they're like, well, we have this house that y'all can live in. It's like, this is perfect. You know, so as a part of being part-time there leading the music, they let us live in this house. We just had to pay utilities on it and stuff. And so that was, and it was like two houses down from the church. So it was really a neat experience for a while. But I felt, and my pastor, Chris Gustafson, Eastern Heights, he always said, you know, don't go in there and be yourself. You cannot go in there and be yourself, you know, and you guys, Reggie, you know me, Robbie, you know me, and you know what myself is like, and you know how that might, cause I'm kind of a clown a little bit. I'm kind of goofy, you know, in a lighthearted way. And a lot of people don't necessarily see that as valuable in their church leadership. However, the pastor that I served with, it sort of got to the point where it felt like he wanted me to be just a version of him. It was like, this is how I found that you should relate to a church body if you want to keep your job, right? Right. And to me, it was, well, you're bordering on personality change. And so that was difficult for me to get into. But so when my wife's father had a stroke in 2018, we decided, well, it's a good time. We can move back in the house, help, because there was no way she could help him do the stuff he needed to do. So moved back in with them and left the church on good terms, you know, probably better terms publicly than a lot of the terms I was thinking in my head. In fact, a friend of mine who's in ministry, I had him review my letter, and he's like, delete all of this, and then you're fine. And it was, okay, I don't want, you know, no sour grapes over stuff, you know, whatever. So resignation letter was accepted well, you know. And then this kind of triggered when I tried to go back to my old church. It was kind of like I didn't know how I fit in anymore, mm-hmm. You know. And some of this is on me, not just them, but I can remember, you know, as people see, oh, it's so good to see you again. You know, I'm so glad you're back and missed you. And like, yeah, I could tell by all the messages and emails and whatever that you sent me, which was zero, you know, all the phone calls. Yeah. And it's like, how much, cause you know, my youngest was raised in this church, right? I've been playing music in that church for forever. You know, the pastor and I in the old church building, we, you know, we're in and out of that building, fixing stuff, working on audio stuff and, just doing stuff together all the time. And it's just like, I don't know. There was a loss of connection. And So it took me a while to kind of get over myself and feel like, you know, it's, I wasn't exactly making a lot of overtures myself, you know. And when I started coming back but was inconsistent, I kind of felt like, well, shouldn't somebody be like, hey, are you doing okay? Haven't seen you in a while, you know, this kind of thing. And I wasn't getting any of that from people. And so that kind of bothered me a lot. And most guys are like, don't contact me. Don't call me. Don't, you know, you don't need to bother me, right? But I was kind of felt like there should be something there. There should be something, somebody trying to open a line of communication. And I think there's, I feel like churches should be doing that, but I guess maybe in our modern day, we've gotten out of the habit of making that personal contact.
Do you think that has something to do with, and I've kind of run into this in a lot of churches, and that's this idea that as men, because we are supposed to lead, we don't need to be filled back up. So we should be responsible for our own spiritual growth, our own spiritual curiosity. I find a lot.
Maybe.
And the reason I say that is if you go into most churches nowadays, they are really working hard to get women's groups together. They are really working hard to do these retreats where there's couples retreats and things like that. And don't get me wrong, I'm all about working on the marriage, right? My wife will tell you I'm very big on open communication and connecting. And but we're going to have a once a month men's breakfast if we feel like it.
Right.
And then, or we might have one men's retreat a year. But we're not going to give men an outlet for communal growth at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's part of why we start to feel empty is we feel, you know, you can only pour out so much before you need somebody to pour back in or something to pour back in. And I feel like the church is very guilty of assuming that men already have that instead of understanding that on a larger scale, we pour more out than most. So it's probably more necessary for us to have a little bit more of being refilled and poured back into.
Yeah, I don't know. I think every church has its personality, you know, in the way they approach things. You know, when you run into a guy that you're friends with, you haven't seen each other in a while, and it's like you don't really make up for lost time. You're just kind of like, you kind of instantly reconnect. You know how it is. It's like, I might not see Robbie for 3 months. We run into each other and it's just like we never not saw each other. You know, it's, we instantly kind of reconnect because guys are different in that sense. And so it could be it's just expected that you're just who you always were.
Yeah.
And everything will reconnect just fine. We can just pick up where we left off, you know, and guys are really good about that and girls aren't as much. You know, they need to sort of reintegrate.
Yeah.
And there could be some of that, that every man is an island, you know, that kind of thing. I don't know. I think we're all very busy, mm-hmm. you know, and we all have our own things that we're dealing with. And everyone, we shouldn't expect that everyone is just thinking about you all the time, you know.
One of the things, though, Jim, I think, and I was thinking about this after we did that episode about, but also to the diverse range of things that now we can occupy our time and our energy to has expanded considerably over the last, well, even 20 years.
Yeah.
There's a vast number of things now that weren't before, like, especially with the media's growing from into the social media space, and then even like in gaming where, you know, the Discord stuff and the communities that create out of that. And then there's just the jobs have changed, and like there's just it's
that
really
fracturing of community bonds.
Exactly. There's just so much more avenues for people's, I guess their niche has now grown. It's not just like, oh, you're a sports guy or you like to read,
right?
You know, or, you know, you like to work with your hands doing woodwork or whatever. No, it's like, it's a whole bunch of more multifaceted things, right?
We're spread much thinner.
Yeah. And so the communities that we have, it's tough to have those tight communities in a geographical region because of the like you said, because the more, the thinner you have now of individuals that are participating in your particular niche that you like mm-hmm. to be in. So I think that plays into what we are as men too, because yes, we all are our husbands and fathers and stuff like that. And that's a commonality that we have in being men. But really where our thought patterns are with like where we spend our contemplation time at is vastly expanded upon. And that's really what's important for men to be able to connect to other men is like, if you're, it's not just about, you can connect through, I'm not saying you can't through being a husband, being a dad and the things that we have in common, but what's going to pique somebody's, I guess, community center to say, I want to now, these other guys are people I want to like grow with or go to bat with or whatever through life, that becomes harder to do because of that whole fractured thing that we live in today, I think.
I think that I just had this thought, and I feel like when you're trying to reach a guy on anything, it's like we think we have to, I don't know what the word is, but we have to metaphorize everything. It's like we have to say, this is your mission, this is your battle, this is your this, this yeah. is your that. And it's, or we think that guys have to be endlessly entertained. You know, when I grew up, my dad was a ham radio computer guy, right? And single dad, only child, like, I didn't have that macho sports dad. I didn't, you know, he didn't really push me to do anything except, you know, behave and get good grades. And it was just like, that was it. So I don't gravitate towards, hey, we're going to go out hunting or we're going to do this sports thing together or whatever, you know, and I like sports. I like watching football. I used to love basketball. I love golf. You know, it's like, I love golf, but I don't really like most golfers.
True.
You know, so I'm not going to gravitate towards that. Let's all get together and do this thing. You know, it's like, even on a work project, I'm like, I'm not a manual labor guy. I have musician hands. Okay.
I think.
So it's like, it's just this idea that we have to have an event. We have to have a thing that makes a man look at this thing as something other than what it is. It's like everything has to be a battle. Everything has to be a war. Everything has to be we have to put some kind of machismo energy behind it to get a guy interested. And I just don't think that's the case. Guys don't want to be pandered to. I don't think they want to be, and we don't need everything formalized either. You know, it's like, or if we're going to have a pancake breakfast, you know, we're going to sit around chit chatting about nothing for 2 hours, but we're going to have a 15-minute devotion. It's like, what are we doing? What are we accomplishing here?
Well, I would agree with that in the sense that, you know, one of the things that really frustrates me is we should have some level of our own motivation if we want to get together with the guys and mm-hmm. you know, whatever happened to, you know, we're having a Bible study Wednesday night, not the church is having an event and right. it's the sword and armor event.
Yeah, like, right, dude, exactly.
Can we just get together and like have a Bible study and hang out and
yeah.
talk about the things that are happening in our lives? I grew up in a very traditional, I was raised by my grandparents. My grandfather was you don't have feelings. You just tamp those boys down and you just swallow them and you just keep on going. And it wasn't until I had kids that part of me kind of started to cut loose, right?
Yeah.
Even when my wife will tell you, it didn't matter what was going on. I just wasn't going to fight with it, right? I was just going to swallow it and keep pressing. But I think the thing that a lot of us are missing nowadays is just that, hey guys, let's get together at my house Tuesday and let's, you know, I've been thinking about James. Let's get together and talk about it, right? You don't have to have a book that you ordered from online. You don't have to have, let's just talk. Let's just be dudes that know each other and are going to get together and talk some stuff out. And it doesn't have, I don't need a Superman cape. We don't need right. t-shirts for it. Let's just do what we want to do, right? I feel like, you know, and let me be honest. I've been to some events that, you know, two of the biggest events that I went to were very impactful on me. One was, we talked about it earlier, was when the guy from 13 Hours came to Southeast and I listened to him speak. And that was just in, just listening to his story was impactful. I got to be there at a church where one of the guys from driving the Humvees from Black Hawk Down was there, and I got to hear him speak. And don't get me wrong, those events can be very cool and useful, and you can see a lot of good things and you can do a lot of cool things. But there's sometimes, man, where it's just something weighing, right? Something's tugging, and you need to get together with some people and try to, you know, some good counsel and try to work that out, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it be within the Bible or just some prayer or just some discussion time. And I feel like that is almost 100% gone at this point.
Well, so I would agree. A lot of that. What do you think, Jim, about just, we talked about this during our episode, but the feminization of church though, mm-hmm. too. All music is very emotional driven in the church. The services are driven to have emotional impact. It's all on purpose. I mean, that's what, you know, there's a psychological aspect to the church on purpose to like right. create this over emotive type of atmosphere, which some of that's okay. But I know speaking for me, I don't necessarily like that right. a lot of time. I mean, that's not really what I'm into. Robbie will tell you, I mean, we grew up with, wasn't our dad was not, non-emotional, you know, he was emotional, but it wasn't like, but he was old school. Like it was like most of the emotions was like anger.
Fire and brimstone. I'm going to have my emotions, but I'm not going to talk about why they happen or what to do about them.
And not that I think it should be that way, but I don't want to be bombarded by that every church service.
Sure. Yes.
You know what I mean?
Very true.
And like, That to me drives a lot of men away from our church experiences because we don't necessarily want, I mean, you know, mm-hmm. I don't want to have to have that. I want a time in my life where I do get broken down and I realize this happens. It should happen every once in a while where you realize and have a recalibration about like, oops, I'm really screwing up here or doing this, but not every Sunday.
I think some of this goes back to, what Brian and I were talking about earlier about there's people that want to separate us into groups. There's people that want to put labels on us, you know, and that's kind of a survival instinct. We got to categorize things so we know what to avoid, what to go into. But men are not monolithic. You know, you want to say, well, men as a whole are disengaging. So how do we re-engage men as a whole? It's not the answer to that question. I think there is a point to what you're saying about the feminization. But I think our modern culture is as destructive to women as it is to men. I mean, look, men invading women's spaces, trying to pretend to be women.
Freaking OnlyFans.
The degradation of motherhood or denigration, I should say, of motherhood.
Well, one example recently is that Sydney Sweeney Jean ad, right? Where she's getting attacked. Right. And being called all this stuff
over a pun,
yeah,
right, right, like, right. Like what?
Yeah,
like where? Yes, this oversensitivation,
sensitivization.
Yeah, that thing. You know. Yeah. Well. Yeah.
Just this oversensitivity to jokes, humor. Whatever.
Everything. Like, I mean, in my little slump I've had here over the last six freaking weeks, you know, I haven't been able to watch, like, it's been easily for me to get easily triggered into like a severe anxiety moment. So like, I've been watching a lot of old comedy movies on purpose because it was like, those are just funny. They're not, it's not all
they're
this.
They're not walking on eggshells.
No, you know,
and, hot button
but
things.
I had to watch older movies.
Yeah.
They couldn't be. There was, you know, although Happy Gilmore 2 I did watch, and that wasn't as obviously as that. And it, say what you will about it, yes, it's, you know,
It was terrible.
It's not the greatest movie, but it was
Adam Sandler terrible.
It was watched it yet.
It was entertaining.
So, it was good.
I won't.
It was good in a terrible Adam Sandler.
I liked it. If you liked Happy Gilmore, I highly recommend it.
Let's be honest. If you're watching a Happy or an Adam Sandler movie because you're looking for like depth of content, you're probably watching the wrong movie.
Or you should watch Spanglish.
Well, Punch Drunk Love and Uncut Gems being put aside, both of those were great movies.
Hey, 50 First Dates is amazing.
Hey, that's a fantastic movie.
It is a good movie.
Yeah.
But, well, you know.
So, I was just gonna. We were talking about that point. I had made some notes and I left my notes at home. So, but you made me remember some of it. With regard to worship, right, or the music portion of the service, I should say, because worship is the whole experience. You want to reach the whole person, and the whole person is both logical and emotional. So you have to have some of that emotional. You have to have a lot of the logical. You know. We can kind of separate it and say, well, the music is the emotional and the preaching is the logical, but not always, you know, and it wasn't always like that because, you know, you used to get your songs out of a hymnal and it had words that people hadn't used for 100 years, you know, and you knew what they meant. But there was a poetry to it and a depth to it. And my belief as a worship leader was always blend everything. Use the hymns, use modern songs, use anything that gets across the message effectively, theologically, correctly. You know, you take, for example, Paul Balazs has a version of How Great Thou Art. It's a modern musical arrangement, but uses the same words, has a little extra bit for the chorus, which is really cool, but it uses the same chord progression, just a little bit different rhythmically, but it still works. Even if you're an older person, you can still sing along with it. It's not, the meter is not that different from what it was out of the hymnal. And it's things like that. We've lost the sense of we're trying to preach and sing to all generations at the same time. Where we're all a big family, multi-generational church family. Everyone should feel like they have a place. Everyone should feel like they have a part. I have no issue with Christian entertainment, concerts, fog machines, you know, lights, any of that.
Haze machines,
thank you.
Foggers are used by DJs.
Fair enough. And I appreciate
that. Hazers are for concerts.
And this is why we need DJs. Robbie.
And I, for one, appreciate the distinction. Thank you so much.
Or you just have Reggie smoke cigars. That's
right.
A nice haze.
I'm happy. The natural haze machine.
Before long, you'll start seeing the light beams.
And I got the blower blowing.
Yeah, it'll be.
But you make a great point, though. One of the best worship experiences I've had, it made the whole thing worth it. Me and Brian went to a concert. Right, but it ended up being the conference was just a men's conference about abortion.
It was a men's anti-abortion rally.
It really was. It was really weird. We didn't know that. But
first of all, let me explain real quick. Reggie calls me out of nowhere, and he's like, "Dude, I found this cool men's event we can go to." And I trust Reggie. I'm like, "Cool." And then he tells me who's preaching, and it's a guy that I've actually followed. So I'm like, "Oh, well." He's very biblically sound. I'm looking forward to going and listening to him. And when we get there, I don't want to say it was sketchy. Just it was in this tiny little strip mall thing.
Well, the church
it was packed. Like you couldn't hardly find a place to park.
There's a lot.
And we get there, and the Holy Nope was there. That was cool.
The what?
There's a guy we follow. We reference him a lot because he's funny.
That's hilarious, dude.
He does these little short reels called, and his channel's The Holy Nope.
Nope, as in
yeah.
Nope.
Yeah, so what he'll do is he'll play.
I want to make sure I was hearing you right.
He's got a killer mustache, and he sits there, and he'll like, "Well, here we are. We're ready to open my Bible, get into the Word." And then he'll play a clip of something, right? And it'll be some obnoxious whatever doing something crazy, and you see his facial expressions, and then he's going to walk out the door, and then he's like, nope.
And
shuts the door. it's fantastic, dude. So, but he was there. Yeah. I mean, I wanted to meet him because, I mean, I love his content.
We got to meet him. It was cool. But we get inside, and there's so many dudes here. Like, there was a lot of guys that showed up.
I was excited at first.
Now,
like, oh, cool. This is like.
But it wound up being a men's anti-abortion rally. And in the middle of him talking, I looked at Reggie and I was like, I think we're in the wrong spot in the sense of this is just getting weird. Like he's up there just banging away. And I'm like,
over and over,
over and over, the same point. Like,
you guys, all of you as a group missed the irony of the whole thing because you're all supposed to go, nope. And turn around and walk out.
But anyway, I'm sorry. I had to tell them the story of how we arrived. But
what they did do that was really cool is they did some hymnals, right? That sang. But they were like the most, I would say, masculine, like old hymnal,
almost
Vikings. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of.
It wasn't
like a thumping drum.
It was rhythmic, Viking, like
hymnal, almost like a Viking kind of thing.
Yeah. It was theologically. It was like in depth. It wasn't just the shallow like, thank you, Lord, for today. Thank you, Lord, for today.
A lot of fourths and fifths and double octaves and
I don't know. Well, we sang terribly, but yeah. There's that. But those hymnals that we sang, we were just, you know, with one guy and the guitar just all singing I was blown away though, because these are stuff that we don't get to experience in
our like local. It was good, in other words?
Yes.
Okay.
Shockingly good.
And it wasn't because the music was that good. It was just because the content of that, what they were singing, though, was so different than the modern contemporary Christian stuff we hear at church day in and day out. Well,
and the even stranger thing was,
I can only handle nautical metaphors so many times. your oceans.
Give them all.
All of the guys in the room. Like, normally, if you get a bunch of dudes together and you start singing, like Christian hymns, like 8 guys out of the 100 are singing. The rest of them are standing with their hands in their pockets. Mm-hmm. But everybody in this building was just, because it wasn't this emotional, like, oh, my soul's crashing against the rocks. And it was very guttural and
stirring.
Yeah.
But that's the kind of thing that we're missing in some of our church services. Now, it doesn't have to be all of them, but like we tend to keep rare. Golly, what is wrong with my speaking today? We keep railing at this whole emotive thing with our contemporary Christian stuff. And a lot of it is just, it's saying the same thing over and over and over again, which, look, we have to be reminded of the gospel all the time, just as it says in the New Testament. I get that, but.
And I think a lot of people have missed the commercialization of all of it. Like it's a business.
Yep.
It's not, you know, and now it's everything you hear on the radio is like congregational. I say that loosely. Worship music. It's like worship music has become the only genre now that they play. You know, we used to have songs that tell a story. It's like, you know, what song am I thinking? Like Michael W. Smith, Secret Ambition. You probably remember that song.
Yep, I sure do.
It was like, it told a story, right? A lot of songs that tell a story about life, and we're not just recycling, I want to say recycling biblical imagery, or just recycling nature images to evoke, like, sense of wonder and grandeur. Like, that's all great, but where's the meat? Where's the applicability? Rather than just because Christian radio, they have, you've probably heard the term Becky, right? They have Becky. They have their avatar for who they're trying to reach. You know, Becky's a soccer mom who drives a minivan, who has 3.4 kids in the car with her. She's driving down the road. She wants to be able to turn on the radio and not have anything offensive come across. And it's like the Christian entertainment industry has done the exact same thing as the worldly or secular industry has done. We've got our own version of woke, you know, where there's certain things you can't talk about and there's certain things you can't touch. And it has to be the most milquetoast, inoffensive, recycled, play it 4 times over the course of the day stuff.
And it's been monetized.
Yeah.
So I was watching a really, really cool clip of a sermon from a guy, and he was talking about, you know, worship right now is probably the most vulnerable to Satan as it's ever been, right? Because Satan, I mean, you know, the Bible talks about it. Satan doesn't just come to your face and say, join the dark side. Like, that's not what he does, right? Satan comes up and he says, you know, hey, you didn't like what they said right there, right? Right? You didn't really like that. That's not really fitting with how
God really say that.
He sneaks in, right? Yeah, right. And so he
appears as an angel of light.
He's a snake, right? He's a serpent. He comes in, he weasels in, he creates the doubt, he woods the doubt, right? So worship now, though, it's become, you know, you get all these professional worship leaders whose whole goal now is to either be the worship leader at a mega church,
yeah,
or to have the hit Christian song that's sang in all the churches. And so now they're not worshiping God, they're worshiping worship.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's, well, there's, you're missing the point.
Yeah, worshiping exactly the activity. Right.
Yeah, and that's because it got monetized.
Freaking awesome point.
You know, right. Well, you know, 50 years ago, that wasn't a thing. When you worshiped, you didn't. You were just worshiping. You weren't sitting there going, "Oh man, I just wrote this awesome worship song. Man, I hope it goes frankincense and myrrh."
You know, with, you know, gold. Well, now the instead of gold, frankincense and myrrh. Yeah. Well, but you take YouTube in consideration now. Pastors now have an avenue to reach people outside their congregations. They're no longer just preaching to the people in their seats. They're now if I, you know, get a good following on YouTube, I can now I can write a book, you know, and then I can, you know.
Which can be awesome.
Right.
Because you can reach a lot of people. So I work with a guy a lot. His name's Stephen McCorder. And he just kind of on a whim started doing some TikToks. And he's got this like insane number now of people who like message him talking about coming to Christ because they come across his TikToks, right?
Yeah.
But you know, while he is a professional worship leader, but I know the guy enough to know that he's doing it because he's called to be a worship leader. Like he's not making tons of money. Right. You know, he's not riding around in an expensive car. He's making enough to pay his bills because God is helping him pay his bills.
Right. It's not like Creflo Dollar. Like I need a new jet.
Not exactly. So he's kind of like the person that I look at. Like this is the guy who knows what he's talking about. Like this is the guy who's worshiping and he's bringing people to worship, not because he's worried about the paycheck, because he's worried about the people worshiping and the people worshiping God, not worshiping his song. And it shows. So when he's on TikTok, he's got a ridiculous amount of followers now because it shows, right? It's a different kind of authenticity that you see. And it's kind of funny to me because then you the next video will be some dude who's like a ridiculous gospel musician.
Yeah.
And they're monetizing their TikTok with their drum fills. Yeah. And you're just kind of like, bro, are you really playing worship music or are you showing people your drum skills?
Well, but I also think, like, I watched a documentary recently called Jesus Music, and it talks about the rise of contemporary Christian music, which actually started back in the late 60s.
Yeah.
And, you know, they interviewed Stephen Curtis Chapman in that documentary, and they asked him a question, and his answer was, just because you say Jesus in a song doesn't make it a worship song. He goes, a lot of the music that is coming out nowadays, they talk about Jesus like a character in a play, not like a meaningful thing inside the music, right? And that's, I think, where my frustration lies, because Reggie and I have been talking about this forever, and it is that it used to be, if you went to a Baptist church, a Christian church, a Presbyterian church, a Methodist church, you would hear either different versions of worship songs, or they might use different parts of a hymnal. But now if I go to five different churches on five straight Sundays, I'm going to hear the same five worship songs.
Using the same.
And it's because it's what's popular on the radio right now. It's not about, well, this song really ties into the sermon and the message we're trying to give. And there's no effort put into it per se, you know, the smokes machine and it's all great. And there's lots of lights and stuff.
Haze machine.
I'm sorry.
Gosh, Brian. But,
God, what is wrong with me?
Just covered this information.
Just talked about it.
But there's no depth to the actual delivery of what the song is or the message in the song. And I'll say this, and there is a current musician. I will not say his name for fear of retaliation. But he's made a lot of what he calls spiritual music. But the only references that he makes to God or Jesus in the song are very veiled. Like they're not direct references. So you can tell that when he's writing songs, he's more worried about, are people going to listen to the song? Mm-hmm. I don't care if they're getting the message out of it. I just want them to listen to the song. And I feel like that's part of the whole disengagement.
Well, here's a good example in a story that me and Robbie both did, because it was something I felt, and I think Robbie did too, but there was a tune Daniel, I can't remember Daniel's last name, wrote, when we were at Southeast, Daphne. Right? Dabney, that's it. Daniel is such a great guy, man. I love that man to death. And I didn't even know him that well, but he wrote this song and I felt so compelled to actually produce a drum part for it, because it was just one of those tunes that you just like, it was meant to be put together. It was so well done. I don't remember the name of the song now, Robbie, to be honest. But
it's, yeah, no, long.
It's been a long time. But we took the time, and Robbie helped me do this. We went to the church at night. I set up my home drum kit. We mic'd it up. We did all this. We like put a lot of work into this thing because it was just that song. It was just so different than the other crap that was all over the radio. It was like, this is legit. Me and Brian both loved that tune. I still have it somewhere. But that just gives you an example though. It was something written by a what I would call a true worshiper of the gospel, who wrote that song that that if there's any worship song that needed a lot of radio time, it would be that one, but it just wasn't good because it didn't fit their formula, right? Of the typical thing, but it was brilliant.
Daniel is definitely one of the best ones that I've ever met.
Well, and it's funny because the secular radio, and I hate those terms, but for lack of a better one, mainstream radio as a music presentation platform is dead.
Yeah, it's gone. Yeah,
it's gone. It's all just recycled top 40, and DJs don't even pick their own music. It's all set by a computer or maybe an AI algorithm, right? Yeah. And so it's Christian music. Christian radio is lagging so far behind that they don't even realize radio is dead. And the platform now is YouTube, it's TikTok, it's these places where music can be shared and go viral. And I think there's going to be a renaissance of music, independent artists doing things that are really more valued. And some of these places like Bethel and some of these shops, worship shops, I call them now, it's like they'll put out their albums and their records and they'll promote their singers, but they all sound the same. And it's all a money-making scheme. It's like Stephen Furtick is a musician now.
Elevation.
It's become a cottage industry that it's more industry than anything else.
Yeah, those institutions, like you have Bethel, you have Elevation, Hillsong, their worship music is the evangelistic tool to get money into the organization itself. That's what they use those for. And I don't think a lot of Christians understand that either, that there's some really troubling things that they teach at these places that are, I would say, very heretical in the manner. And I think you pinpointed something right there, is that the music that they're producing is it's a formula, and it is to monetize the organization itself to produce more.
Yeah.
More and more.
Well, and those of us who grew up in Pentecostal churches, we see you.
Yeah.
We know what that is.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
This is the Assemblies of God trying to deformalize and become something more palatable.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the equivalent of being on a TV with a phone number at the bottom talking about giving to your...
Right, it's the new Paul Krauts.
Yeah. Well, I think they forget that we are...
Bitty hand.
We are built to be peculiar and not of the world. And I think that's the attraction, right? I think that we now are so, we want everybody to be believing what we believe, and we'll feed it to them in whatever form that they want to be fed.
Yeah.
Right. Like, when you've got these giant preachers going out and making statements like, I'm not sure that Jesus was the Son of God, and you say things like this that are bullseye heretical and untrue, and then you translate it into, like the Brandon Lakes and people like that who are out there performing and writing these songs, and they're very whitewashed, and they're not, there's no depth to them. And I think part of that too is a reason why men are kind of disengaging from the church community too, is, there's a part of us that is looking for depth. People all the time like to make the statement, well, men are really easy. I beg to differ. We might not be complicated in our everyday day-to-day need, but I am certainly looking for depth in my life, right? Mm-hmm. And things that carry meaning. And this whitewashed stuff, and I hate to say it, as I become older, it becomes more and more offensive to me, to the fact that I know what the gospel tells me, and
right.
I know what I'm supposed to follow, and I've got all these people trying to serve me up a literal, and I'll say it, hot garbage, right? And you don't understand, or you can't, if I cannot connect something that you preach to me, sing to me, or say to me in the context of Christ that I'm able to biblically reference, mm-hmm. then I don't want to hear what you have to say, because you're just trying to feed me something to satiate your appetite, not mine.
But this goes into you're
creating with the intent of consumption.
Yeah.
Yeah. You talked about authentically creating.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this goes right into that. Yeah,
that's really exactly why I said that. I mentioned that phrase because that came up in my show.
And I think you did a good job about talking about that. But I think that's worth mentioning here. Because everybody's creative in some way or another. But I think in terms of like whether it be a podcast, a book, music, whatever, the authenticity of that is really a problem right now, I think. Mm-hmm. And I mean, even me, who's trying to kind of build up the gumption, I'd say, to write my own book. That's challenging though, because I'm trying to be authentic, but it's not just something you just don't sit down and go, well, I guess some people can, but you don't just do that, as you know very well. Cause I mean, side note, I did read on your Substack, you were working on your book, which I'm tickled about.
Cause something new to read. Awesome.
I told Jim, I loved his first one. I thought it was really well done. I'm looking forward to the continuation of it, to be honest.
So is Robbie.
Yeah, I told him a long time ago, when the hell am I getting my damn sequel?
Yeah, I know.
Like, come on, man. Language.
But I guess, Jim, for you, because you are, you you have done the work to like write and write, and I think write well, and actually do a story that was, I think, authentically done. So from that perspective, man, can you get into a little bit more detail about what you mean when you say creating authentically? Just because I think it's worth rehashing here a little bit.
Oh, well, let me go back to my notes from that episode, because I do have that on here. Project Planner Archive.
I didn't know you read his book. Robbie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
So I'm going to support my friends.
Well, I bought it. It's like when he released it, I like bought it right immediately, but I didn't get to it for a while.
He was my first real fan of that book.
I read it almost immediately when it came out.
Yeah.
And I really liked it.
I did too. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah.
So this came from, I was listening to Theo Von's podcast when he had Mike Rowe on. And they were talking about, you know, somebody in China who's making a sweater for someone they'll never know and they'll never meet. And you'll never care about. And the idea is that we're consuming cheap, meaningless stuff for the cheap labor. And there's no sense of the craftsman at work anymore. There's no sense of taking pride in the product you make for somebody. And so, and I think that was tying into my mind with the whole preaching and the broadcasting it all out. And it's like, you might say something, put something out there in the ether that reaches somebody, that plants just the right seed that they need to know. But that's not going to take the place or do anything more value than what I do for this person right next to me, that's in my personal space, that we interact with on the day to day, you know? So if you're just making whatever it is, content to make money, then there's something cynical about that. It's like, I understand that the artist should be valued for their work, right? I mean, the Bible says don't muzzle the ox as it's treading out the grain. And the idea there is that, you know, that the apostles should receive remuneration for their travels and at what they were doing. And so pastors, we believe in paying pastors to do the job. But if you're getting into the pastorate for the money, you're doing it for the wrong reasons. If you're creating art for the money, you're doing it for the wrong reasons. Now, certainly you should be paid for your artwork. It's like Monet sells a painting. He deserves, you know, money for it, but Monet didn't paint to make money. So there's a fine line there, I think. You know, it's like I'm a musician, so I want to do that for a living is different than I want to do that to make more money, I guess is what I was trying to say. It's like if you're creating something with the expectation of getting stuff in return, then that might not be the right motivation. That's not the motivation that's going to keep you going through the hard times.
Yeah, I think you find a lot of authors nowadays that churn out books all the time.
Well, and yeah, when the Kindle revolution first happened, they discovered that this rapid release concept was all the rage. And you can write fairly decently, fairly quickly. It's one of the myths that writing takes a long time. You know, you can, and you don't have to take a year to write a whole book, you know. But these people were churning out like a book a month. And was like, because that was the best way to get the attention of the Amazon algorithm. The faster you release new content, the more it could push more content out. But what they've discovered is that didn't help with retention. Because the length of time that people interact with that has shown that if it's not a long enough time, is going to fall out of the recommendation engine. And I was just listening to a show about this recently, and I don't remember. I listen to so many things, so I can't retain it all. Just brought it to mind. But the idea is that the Amazon algorithm now is algorithm? Aneurysm? Amazon aneurysm is changing all the time because they're trying to figure out how to best serve the audience. It's not about how to push the most product. It's about the algorithm is basically the audience. If you serve your audience, the algorithm will serve you. And so, but if you're making books that people aren't spending time with, then it's viewed as not as valuable. It's viewed as, oh, this isn't really reaching this audience member. So they want something else that's going to engage them as far as readership goes.
Yeah, I mean, I think this goes into more than just like you said, like you're talking about with the Kindle revolution and all that kind of stuff, but also with music, with podcasting, with YouTube content, with everything else. I mean, there's a lot of this that you're seeing too. And when you were speaking about that, you know, one of the things that you see at least pops up in my YouTube feed a lot is like these craftsman type of videos where the, you know, some Japanese craftsman of this is making their traditional way of doing it. And so they have this, you know, they've recorded this videography around how they've handmade this boat or something, you know, and right. It's incredibly intricate and all this kind of stuff. And it's got like 3 million, you know, views of, because I think people crave that still.
Yeah.
But consumerism in our cultures and, I guess probably greed and some of that other stuff have led from a degradation of that into our own culture. Like it's pretty rare when you see now in especially in the United States where that's something that's like really upheld and like shown as like a really, really good thing. Now I think that might be turning around now in a sense, and I hope it is, but I guess all I'm getting at is like, whether you're creating something for, as content or whether you're creating something for music or whether the authenticity of that is crucial for that whole, your connection to the people.
Well, and I think there's plenty of people like the common advice on YouTube is to niche down to something very specific and make content consistently on that topic. And in some sense, it's like, this is the way you succeed on YouTube. This is the way you build a following. That's the best way to use the algorithm to your advantage to get your videos pushed out to more people. But the problem with that is like, well, I'm going to get on YouTube and make that my part-time job because I need more money, right? And there's one sense where, yes, you can do that. That is possible, but you lose something as you continue to try to churn out stuff on the regular on one topic. Burnout is very easy if you're not extremely uber passionate about this one particular thing. And by golly, if you stray off of that topic once, you know, you're going to lose 3,000 people just won't watch that video or what have you. And so you're kind of locked in as a slave to the algorithm to produce the same thing with a different flavor over and over and over and over and over and over. And it's really easy to lose that authenticity because now you're going through the motions.
Yeah. Well, I think this goes into the church too, right? Because I think doing church authentically is what's also helping to retain your body of the church, but also to increase its reach and all that kind of stuff. And you see churches who do this really well. They're very authentic with what they're doing, and there's not an ulterior motive. And they're usually not big churches. They're usually not, you know, they're just small places where you see this revitalization of the gospel and how people are living better and all this kind of stuff. I think that's where we as Christian men can help engage more in that aspect where we need to push our churches, we need to push our communities to be more authentic in the way that we express and worship the gospel.
I think it's kind of like a sound guy who really likes the phrase mix minus and like tries to throw that into a conversation every time you see him because he thinks it makes him sound smart. But and like in churches, we it's Christianese, right? We fall into our normal Christian phrases and our normal the way we pray and the way we talk about things and the way we say things is different than how we say them when we're out, you know, wherever. And I think especially men we don't gravitate towards that because now you sound like you're selling me something. You know, it's like now you've rehearsed this and it's like, We don't usually spend a lot of time sitting around rehearsing everything we're going to do, you know, everything we're going to say. We just kind of react, you know, and I think there's a sense of doing church in a way that's not authentic. It's rote. It's going through the motions. It's doing what you're doing what you've always done because that's the way you've always done it. And I think that puts a lot of us off from the activity itself is because I know I'm going to go there and it's going to be the same thing that I get every time, you know, and I've been fortunate. I've gone to two really good churches since when was Madigan born? 2004. So for like 21 years, I've gone to only two churches really that have been extremely strong on theology, on the way we do music and the way we interact with people. Like you don't get a lot of fluff and you get a lot of people who really love each other and been really lucky in that regard.
Yeah, I know.
And so I don't really have a lot of experience with the modern church stuff because I haven't been exposed to a lot of it. I just see it.
Yeah.
With other people.
Well, so we recently did find a church that we really, really, really like, and I'm serving in that church now. And we're super stoked because we did try to find, and it was such a, It was, I don't know.
It's hard. It's hard to find one where you feel like you belong.
Yeah. And it's not even that they're bad necessarily. It's just like it's either like you don't feel like you belong or like there's like something weird that you just kind of off putting or there's, I don't know. There's all kinds of things. And some of that's you are doing that too. But you know, when you do find a church that resonates and like does things the kind of more attuned to who you can belong to it. Boy, it makes a huge difference.
Brian, did you want to say anything during this segment?
I was going to, after Reggie. You know, and you've probably heard me say this if you've listened. I'm at a point in my walk where I've given up on the whole denominational part of church. Like, I don't abide by church denominations. I believe if I've been saved and I'm walking with God, I should be able to walk into any church and be welcome as a man of faith. You would think. And for me, it's become more of a search within myself. Like, I'm not, like, for me, the backdrop of the church that I'm at, and I'm sure one of the people from my church is going to watch this and say something, isn't important to me. What's important to me is that I'm in a place where I am allowed to look for that depth of relationship with God that I want to, that I'm not being interfered with, that my children are being well taken care of within the church. Those are the things that are important to me. I feel like church is like anything else. In different stages of life, we're going to find different churches that suit us for that stage of life. When my kids were very young, Reggie and I attended a church. That church was very good for that stage of our life. At the end, we disagreed with some things that were going on, so we left that church. No hard feelings, no anger when we left.
Just didn't suit you.
Just didn't suit us anymore, and there were some things that went on that we didn't agree with. We still have friends from those churches, that church that we communicate with. You know, and then we went on to another church that fit my kids in that more middle space where they were not quite teenagers, but they weren't real small. And now I'm in a church where it fits where they are at in their life. They've helped my oldest son get into missions and things like that. But I think, and I could be wrong about this, and I would love to hear your opinion on it. I don't necessarily think that we all have to have a home church per se, right? Like, Christ is the church.
Mm-hmm.
So wherever two or more gather, there I am, right? So if I decide to go down the street this Sunday and walk in that church and I'm worshiping and I'm listening and I'm taking part, I don't think there needs to be a lot of hullabaloo made about where I'm at and what I'm doing, as long as I'm doing it in my walk with God and I'm doing it biblically and I'm not setting poor examples. For me, I've just kind of lost that desire to find the perfect church. Like, it doesn't exist. There is no perfect church.
Yeah,
no. You're never going to find one. You're never going to find a church where everything's right and you like everything that's going on. It just doesn't exist. So what I do is I really work more on making sure that I'm biblically in line and that I'm setting that example for my family. And wherever we're landing, I'm setting that example for the people around me. And if that landscape changes, in my mind, that's God's plan.
Mm-hmm.
We need you to move here now, Brian, because I've got something for you here. Right. So now that may change as my children get older and leave and my wife and I settle into a life without, you know, post kids and things like that. But right now, I feel like God is working on me in a lot of different ways all the time. And for me to say, well, I've got to find this perfect congregation, or I've got to find this perfect worship, or I've got to, it's just not ever going to be that at every place I go. But I also do get the desire for having a home church, right? I understand that desire. I understand that need to be able to set the feet on the ground and say, this is where I'm going to take my stand. This is where I'm going to put my effort. But for me, I just feel like we've gotten so into such a rhythm. You go into a church and the minister's doing this whole same formula every week. Let's pray. Let's sing. I'm going to preach. I'm going to make one joke. I'm going to give you two Bible verses. I'm going to talk about them. We're going to pray, and then we're going to go home.
3 points in a poem.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So for me, it's more about, like, in the current church I'm in, where do I go to get what I think God is looking to give me? So my wife and I don't go to service. We go to Sunday school and we get our kids involved in the kids programs and we're involved in the Sunday school. I don't want to say we don't go to service ever. Like, last week there was a kid led service. My sons were in there. So we went in there and took part in that service. But there's, to me, I don't think there is a perfect formula, right? Like, we want one. And that's that desire of our hearts that as people that we have is we want the perfect thing, right? You know, but what always happens when we think we found the perfect thing, we're real good for a little bit. And then all of a sudden something bugs us and well, I need the new perfect thing. I've just kind of made peace with the fact that the perfect thing's not there.
Yeah. You know, I've struggled with that before. Like, why do we do the order of worship in the way we do it, right? Why do we put everything in this particular order? I always advocated for doing the announcements at the beginning, right? Mm-hmm. So, have you read your bulletins? No. Well, let me point out some important things. Okay, let's get that out of the way before we actually get serious, you know? And forever, my church always put the announcements after the invitations. Like, okay, now that we're all getting ready to walk out the building, let me just throw these things at you. Let me read the entire bulletin for you in case you can't read it yourself, right? You know, that always drove me nuts. Well, come to find out, when I started going back, they switched it up and they put the announcements at the beginning. So just like I always told you. But, you know, there's a reason why we don't do the invitation at the beginning, right? There's a reason we sing before we hear the word. You know, there's a reason these things occur. And I think lamenting that there's an order to these things, I think is looking at the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of those hangups that we get, personal hangups, like drives me nuts. Robbie, does it drive you nuts when somebody else is mixing a service and you got to sit there and listen to that? And you're like, the EQ needs a cut on, you know, 600 megahertz, like bring that down a little bit, you know? And it's like, I really struggle with the idea that I can't just walk up there and fix the mixer, right? Now, they've gotten better, and I've gotten better about not being so hung up on that. And because I'm so used to being in that area. But I think there's a value to being in a place where you became parents together. You watched each other's kids grow up. You've watched these other kids graduate high school and go to college, and being with a group of people through all the phases of life, I think is really valuable. That doesn't mean that's the way it's supposed to be for everybody. I think that's really good if you can find that. I think it's better. You don't have to find a home church that's your home church forever, but I think it's better if you can. I think it's more valuable if you are able to, if God presents that opportunity, you know, that's something not to sneeze at.
Yeah.
You know,
I think this circles back to what we were talking about at the very, very beginning here. The church is the body of Christ in total, but it's also the church as the community in which you choose to live life with.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason, and I think this is a very apparent problem in the churches we have in the United States, really, particularly in the Western world, but that's what we're failing at, is that community to live life together experience in the church.
I agree with that.
Because we're not, there's no, if that was done well, there wouldn't be a lack of phone calls or texts or something to say, right, where you been this blah, blah, blah. Cause it'd be
if the church universal was all we needed, we wouldn't need families.
Right.
You know,
wouldn't exist.
It's like, I am one whole person inside myself. My wife and I are a whole couple. My wife and kids are a whole family. It's like my neighborhood. We're a whole neighborhood. It's like we live life in these concentric circles. And it's like, if all you think you want is the big circle, well, you're missing something.
Yeah.
You know? And so everything is microcosm for something else. And so it's like I said, you know, you can reach out to thousands of YouTube subscribers, but if you're not affecting the person sitting next to you, you know, you're missing the trees for the forest.
Well, I think that feeds into other things too. I feel like the church has, and I use the word weapon in the lightest way possible. There are certain weapons within the church that we have to impact people that I think the churches have almost stopped using. I can't remember the last time I've gone to a church and I've heard a true testimony at the stage, mm-hmm, where the minister brings somebody up and they have a real conversation, because everything that's ever impacted me on a level that has caused change within me has been hearing the testimony, whether it was the testimony of Peter in the Bible, whether it was the testimony of, you know, whatever, whoever that person was,
mm-hmm.
what it instills in me is hell can come, but there's still a way for, there's still a way through it. Right.
Yeah.
And I think what we've, where we've gotten to this point where we, the church wants to whitewash everything and make it very comforting.
Yep.
I'm going to read out of Matthew. I'm going to read out of Mark. I'm going to read out of Luke. I'm going to read out of John. But sometimes you got to hear this person went through every possible thing, every possible, mm-hmm. you know, hurdle, incident. And I think the church has almost completely turned away from the power of the testimony and said, we're just going to get up there. We're going to give you a show. When it's over, we hope you feel good.
Right.
Raise your hands, praise, all that stuff. Where, you know, but when I sit down and I hear, you know, I one of the most impactful things I ever heard was, again, I'm going to bring this up, but it was a lot happened at this one. The guy from 13 Hours talked about something that they cut out of the movie. And he said they all got really upset about it and they nearly almost quit the movie. Was there was a point right before combat started that they all gathered in the breezeway and they prayed together.
Mm-hmm.
And they prayed for God to protect them in this battle. And he goes, they cut it out of the movie. And it was a very powerful moment in that conversation that hit me where I was like, uh-oh, he faced something that he had to make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't hear that in the church anymore. I hear a lot about, you know, John the Baptist and those are great stories. And I read my Bible and I don't have an issue with hearing about those stories, but it's really difficult, especially when you're in a very difficult stage in life to hear that same story over and over again. It begins to lose its tread for you, right?
Its impact.
But when you bring somebody in and say, all right, and you hear a story that
you haven't heard yet.
Yeah. Or that may in some ways parallel the troubles that you're going through, that helps strengthen you for that battle that you're in, right? And I feel like the church has just let that go.
Well,
like just here, we're going to let testimony go. Because one thing I'll
tell you, some of that has been dumped down to the small group, you know. Yeah.
But even in my Bible study, I annoy them because I ask a lot of really piercing depth questions and I look into a lot of subtext and what we're talking about. And I'm always bringing that up in conversation, but it's very much, here's our six talking points.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about this verse? What do you think about this verse? What do you think about this verse? Well, that's good, but we're talking about this verse. Isn't the purpose of being in the Word to provoke more questions, to find more of your center? And I feel like the church is really just, it's really formalized itself into a place where I talk to a lot of people that have fallen away from church and they're like, it was just the same thing over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that has something, you know.
Well, I think you'd like it at Eastern Heights. We have these kind of conversations in Sunday school all the time.
Yeah. So.
Awesome. All right, Jim. So just for the listeners,
yeah.
We have the three that will listen to this. how's the progress on the book? Where are we at?
So we're over 30,000 words at this point, which is about a third of the way through. I wrote about this on my Substack where I wrote about 92,000 words of a book to come after. And I realized I was writing the wrong book. Wrote a whole novel and realized this isn't what it needs to be. It took me forever to figure out what does the sequel need to be. And so that's, Robbie, that's a lot of the delay that you've been experiencing.
Good things are worth waiting for.
Yeah. And a lot of it's going to probably, I'm holding in reserve for later down the road in the series, you know, so, but, we're moving along and, feeling pretty good about it. I got other irons in the fire.
That's good. What's next for the Indiana Jim? Cause I know are you still doing the Star Wars survival guide? Stuff?
Well, I got out of the habit of doing YouTube videos cause they just took so much time. And True. Plus I was trying to get all my mouth stuff situated, figured out. And I'm still having a hard time learning how to talk normal again. So, I will probably eventually get back to that because I did a big long essay on why everything wrong with the sequel trilogy started with The Force Awakens, which for some reason is everybody's favorite sequel movie. So I'm now probably owe people a Last Jedi video, but, I just kind of got out of doing that just because it was taking up so much time and process. And that's not a focus of mine right now. So I don't know what the future holds for that. Right now I'm doing, the new Adventures of Indiana Jones. So I brought back the podcast. I do that, record that every Sunday. And did it for like 4 weeks in a row now. So I've developed some consistency, and that's what I'm trying to do is just develop habits around the things that I feel like I need to be doing. Like, I don't think I need to be so obsessed with my golf swing anymore. I'm not trying to go out and play every week. You know, it's just kind of, I sort of set that aside because there are things that I'm already really good at that I just need to do those things, focus on those things because that's where my strengths are already. And that has kind of helped me in my overall life experience. It's helped me get back into going to church again. It's because it's like, I talked about the art of making a decision, wrote about that on Substack, talked about it on YouTube. When you make a decision, the word literally means to cut off. Like, you decide to do something. You're cutting off any other possibility. You've decided to do this. And I think anymore we make a decision, it's like, oh, I'm going to maybe do that. I guess I'll do that. Like, when you go to the store, you decide, I'm going to go to the store. And you go. You don't go, well, I'm going to sit on my couch. Well, then you haven't decided to go to the store, right? It's that kind of idea. And so it's like, I have to make a decision what I'm going to do. And I've decided I'm going to write because that's where my strengths are. You know, I'm going to do this podcast because it's a creative outlet. I'm already good enough at it. This is what I like to do. And that's where my focus is right now, is on those things. Like, I'm not going to go be a golf teacher. I'm just not. I'm not going to put that amount of time in.
Yeah.
Because I'm not good enough at that yet. It would take me a lot of work to get good enough at that. Or like being a personal trainer, you know. It would take me a lot of work to learn how to be a personal trainer first to get myself right and then do that. And it's like, I don't have time to get good at that when I'm already good at this.
Yep. Yep.
Bloom where you're planted. Do what God's equipped you to do.
There you go.
Absolutely.
What's next for Robbie?
Yeah. A shower.
Robbie came straight from the golf course.
Yeah, for the golf course today. So I'm speaking of. It's 92 degrees out there. So I am.
Is that all?
Stinky fat man.
That's. Yep. Well, man, it's been awesome having you on, Jim.
It has.
I'm sure we'll do another recap of Indiana Jim in the future. Robbie, thanks for being on. We appreciate it.
Yeah. We had a full boat today, and I liked it.
Ooh, it was very cool.
It's Indiana Jim and the Temple of Pain. Jim,
real quick, can you tell everybody the name of your book in case anyone will look for it?
Yeah, your current book.
First Blade by Jim Perry. You can find it on Amazon, anywhere ebooks are sold.
It's worth reading. Go read it.
Nice. Nice.
Cool. You can go to indianajim.substack.com for everything else.
Awesome.
We're R&B Talks.
I'm Brian.
I'm Reggie.
I'm Jim.
See you guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.